Hello, everyone. It's Thursday, the 18th of May, and welcome to episode 155 of the Kite Podcast with me, Ben Eagle. It's that time of year again when we discuss whether we have or haven't yet reached peak milk in terms of milk flows. We'll also be looking at the situation across the north and south of the UK today when it comes to forage, silaging, of course, and grass growth. Kite's Paul Mesa is here to give us the stats and his views. We're also joined by Kite consultant Elliot Greenfield, our podcast producer, and senior consultant at Kite, Becky Leach. And as always, everybody's favourite dairy market analyst, Chris Auckland, who we're going to head over to you straight away for the Milk Market Report. Chris, where are you this week?
Well, I wasn't invited to the Downing Street shindig on all things food and farming, so I'm not bringing you my report from there.
Yeah.
Nor am I bringing it from the milk fields of Britain, nor any milk field from anywhere, in fact. Instead, I'm bringing it from the offices of Brager, Eagle and Squire, which is a law firm you've never heard of in New York. Ask me why.
Why, Chris?
Well, because this week they filed a class action lawsuit against the fake meat wizards Beyond Meat on behalf of all persons and entities who purchased shares in the firm between May 2020 and October 2022. The action is because Beyond Meat and, I quote, made materially false and misleading statements and omissions and engaged in a scheme to deceive the market. These misleading statements and omissions artificially inflated the price of Beyond Meat stock and operated as a fraud or deceit on investors. Well, go to top of our stairs, as they say in Beckyland, a fake food company inflating their prospects and lying about their capability. Who would ever have thought it? That's one to watch for sure, and maybe it might be coming to the dairy industry soon with all of those fake milk alternatives. Anyway, away from fantasy food, fake dreams and overblown promises and onto the proper stuff and what's been happening in our world this week. Alas, the GDT failed to make it three rises in a row. The index dropped by 0.9%, but butter did lift a touch. Arla's skim milk powder increased again, though, by a useful 80 euros to 2,450, which is its highest price since March. The price is now up £200 in just three auctions, so we'll take that every day of the week. In terms of a milk price equivalent from the GDT, we now have 32p on the board for August, September and October. Not brilliant, but it is rising a bit, just not fast. In Europe, there are some more encouraging signs. Prices for the current quarter are continuing to edge upwards. But there are some big jumps for quarter three for Gouda, now with quotes coming in at over 3,600 euros and 3,450 euros for mozzarella. 2 weeks ago, they were at 3,100. So there's a decent 10% rise there. And again, prices haven't been at these levels since the start of the year. On butter, unsalted has traded for 4,700 euros for June, and it hasn't been there for quite a while either. And they're at 4,800 euros to 4,900 euros for quarter three. Remember, not long ago, prices were at 4,300 or even below. And the last time Dutch butter was at 4,900 euros was back in January. It looks as if they might, with luck and a following wind, be closing in on 5,000 euros, therefore. On the Dutch quotations, butter increased again, skim milk powder held, and across Dutch, French and German quotations, those are the main ones quoted these days, the only one that dropped was Dutch whey. So I think we should be pretty heartened by that, all things considered. And I take it as a further indication that there has indeed been a turn for the better, which I thought was in the making 2 or 3 weeks ago, and which we've been talking about ever since. Remember, you heard it here first. Now, cream in Europe has also shot up to 5,400 euros, an equivalent to 188 in our money. I don't know why it has surged, but it has. In the UK, though, cream is in the high £1.50s, so nowhere near the European price. On the futures, New Zealand butter is up for 5 weeks now, but skim powder dipped a touch, but nothing major. And the same is true in Europe. Slight dips, nothing major either. As with the GDT, we've got 32p's on the board for later this year. Not great, I know, but the UK market should or will generate a premium over that for most producers. Finally, I've not heard there's been a big surge in spot milk prices yet, so still below 30p, I hear, but I'll know more about that later. So that's it. Now let's get on to the main subject of the day, milk volumes. And to Mr. Elliot, who I must say does have the perfect surname for a dairy consultant. And of course, Mr. Paul. So take it away, Ben.
That's true. He really does have the right name. Elliot, welcome to the show. It is your first time on the podcast. So welcome. Can you introduce yourself to the listeners, first of all, and tell us a bit about you, your role and your specialisms?
Thanks, Ben. And hello, everyone. And thanks for having me. I am based in the north of England in Cumbria, work with a mixture of clients offering both business and technical advice, really across the county and a bit down through into sort of into Lancashire and into Scotland. So, yeah, a good mixture. And enjoy my time in the north. It's nice to talk about that this morning and invite you all into the gates of heaven.
I'm not having that. The Cumbria Yorkshire war off. I think Elliot's been very modest. Got an awesome background in farm management, Elliot, haven't you?
So probably over the last pre-kite, I worked for a large organisation managing some large-scale dairy farms from 300 to 1,200 cows across the southwest of England and some into Scotland, some in the Midlands, got a really good standing all around the country. I saw a lot of different systems and managed a lot of people and a lot of different farms. So, yeah, some fantastic experience from working with them that I've definitely brought forward into my consultancy.
Right. Well, you will have seen some pretty busy farmers this week in the north with the break in the weather. It has been quite a challenging spring. It's been quite a lot going on. What's your take on where farmers in the north are when it comes to silage and a bit on grass growth as well at the moment?
Yeah, thanks, Ben. We've had a slow spring and a slow start up here in the north. Debatable to whether we've had a spring at all and moved straight into whatever this weather is that we've got at the moment, between sort of spring and summer. We've seen some fantastically heavy crops. We had a good start to finish to winter, a fantastically dry February where a lot of people got on and managed to get a lot of work done, field work, which has definitely paid dividends now looking through. And seen some great grass growth, especially over the last month, 6 weeks, but the weather just hasn't played ball. We've had some horrendously wet weather, but in turn, we've had some heavy crops. There's been a few still hesitant with ground conditions. Ground conditions still out fantastic on farm. And that's what's caused a lot of people to slow down, not be as early as usual. But we haven't had the break in the weather to be able to get going. Many have taken advantage of that really over the last fortnight, but definitely this week and late part of last week. We had a bit of a break in the weather over the weekend, which would have caught a few out. But I think what we're seeing in general is that crops are very good. In the north, we're probably not a lot later than usual. Some of their multi-cut systems, yeah, they might have gone particularly normally the last week of April. But where we are now, we're starting to get a little bit late, but I think people have really taken advantage of these breaks that we've had in the weather. It's been a busy season, and I think to get around it, a lot of people have just had to go and, well, it's been difficult, but go and take small blocks at a time and just try and break up that workload and keep in silent and a bit stopping, waiting for the weather to pass by and then go again at the next opportunity.
And of the samples that you've seen in terms of quality, what's it looking like?
It's probably too early to say really on how the samples are looking coming out of the plants. Fresh grass samples have been good. Protein levels have been high, especially over this last fortnight. Weather's helped that. Prior to that, any that I'd taken, probably seeing lower than normal on them, on protein-wise. It's really too early to say what grass quality is going to be like once ensiled. I think we'll get a good idea over the next couple of weeks once people have got pits filled, and we can start to get on to see what we're going to look like for feeding this over the late summer, early autumn. We'll have more of an idea then, I think.
Paul, let's head down south. Let's head over to you. It's definitely not your first time on the podcast. How's silaging been so far in the south?
Interesting would probably be a fairly polite description of it, I think, Ben. we've had a few, took some early cuts mid-April, and then there was a 4 or 5 day window of opportunity right at the beginning of May. But since then, things have been absolutely rubbish. We had a lot of really heavy thunderstorms in the week after the Coronation Bank holiday. So barely a wheel turn then, and the ground just got wetter and wetter. This time last week, I think it would be fair to say that from, you know, here downwards into the south and southwest, people were pretty much at their wit's end, and it really didn't look like things would ever dry up. We saw a few wet crops being snatched, trailers getting stuck, fields in a mess, and the odd tale of clamps collapsing under the pressure. As the grass was so heavy. But as Elliot was saying up in the north, I think Mother Nature's galloped to the rescue just in time this week. I walked grass at the beginning of the week, and the quality is probably still there. There wasn't a seed head in sight, I suspect that there'll have been a huge tonnage of grass shifted this week. As far as quality is concerned, then, like Elliot, a bit too early to make any calls on the main cuts that are probably being done now, but the early cuts in April, the quality was very good, as you might hope, but unsurprisingly the dry matters were lower than ideal, and I suspect that we're going to have to be gearing ourselves up to feeding some wetter forages this time than we perhaps have done for the last year or two.
And in terms of the grass growth data that's coming out of AHDB, you monitor that. What's that been showing?
Well, up until last week, it was tracking the 5-year average pretty closely. But from the week from the 3rd to the 10th of May, we saw an absolutely massive surge. The average was over 85 kilos across all the monitor farms. And several recorded over 100 kilos of dry matter per hectare per day, which, is a phenomenal growth rate. So this was actually on a par with the same week last year, but I suspect and certainly hope that the curve will have a slower decline this time round, given the current soil moisture levels.
Now, a lot of farmers, especially in the south, may have wanted to start cutting silage early to offset the declining forage stock from last season. How are forage stocks looking?
Well, again, I suspect that by the time the podcast is broadcast, the general consensus will be that grass silage stocks are being replenished reasonably well. And for the time of year, we're in a more normal place than we perhaps were last year. Looking across the other forage crops, then again, winter cereals have got off to a really good start. So there's some potentially some good whole crop for those that are planning to go down that route. The maize story, that's slightly different. There's still a heck of a lot of maize to drill. And the crops that have been sown, they're sort of sitting in cold and wet soils, or have been up until this week. So not the best of starts for those. Late sowing means a later harvest, and undoubtedly there will be some compromise in yield. But I think there's still a reasonable potential there, certainly to exceed last year's crops, which some of us will remember were being harvested in July before they shriveled up and disappeared completely.
Yeah, wait and see what this summer has in store for us. But Elliot, let's go back to you. What are you advising clients to ensure the best quality forage that they can achieve?
Try and take a view on quality rather than quantity. As Paul just said, we didn't seem to really have the difficulties with quantity last year up here. I think we could say that we had a pretty fantastic summer. But really just try and maximise every megajoule of energy and every bit of protein within that clamp, opposed to just the volume. Multi-cut systems obviously enable this. Been obviously going to be a bit difficult this year with the weather. We're a bit later. It's going to be difficult to get them later cuts in late summer, depending on what the summer does and how we find the weather going into early autumn. But these multi-cut systems really try and help us increase forage inclusion rates within diets. Something that's going to be essential this year, and where we're seeing milk prices falling and volatile feed markets. So really just looking for grass-wise and advising on farm, really just trying to advise on using varieties that are proven for yield, quality and disease resistance, ideally perennial rye grasses, and reseed regularly. Keep monitoring soil pH as well when they're reseeding. So targeting sort of that 6.5. And try and be accurate with both fert and slurry. Something really that, if we look towards slurry, that's really been essential over the last 12 months. So really try to slurry test as well throughout the season, and make sure that they are testing a few times throughout the season just to account for them changes in dry matter. Other things really that just try to advise on farm, you know, this year is going to be essential to get these first cuts off and get the grass just growing again, to ensure these later cuts, these second and third cuts and other subsequent cuts that's been sort of delayed by the weather, really starting to try and target the dry matter really in the early 30s when they try to cut this grass, and tedding carried out where necessary, get the chop length according to the dry matter. So we all know that it can be difficult to ensile some of these lower dry matter crops, especially what we've seen around multi-cut. Mace would probably come in and agree with that. And I think we've seen some difficulties last year, especially with that. But I think this year is going to be difficult, especially with some of these, as Paul said, some of these lower dry matter crops that we've seen. But to try and avoid that, just fill clamps in sort of long, shallow layers, and try and enable good compaction level. Lastly, the use of a good additive.
Mace was beside himself with excitement listening to Elliot talking. It's like he's eating your little handbook, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's nothing further to add, my lord.
What are you guys feeling in terms of, you know, I know we're a bit early in the season to be talking about this, but, you know, it makes a huge difference when you're rationing on farms, you know, the forage quality and the forage quantity that you've got to work with. You know, if you had to choose one option, Mace, what's your dream? Well, your dream is probably to have it all, but knowing that we usually have to make a compromise somewhere, what are you going to settle for?
Well, like, you're quite right. I am greedy, Becky. I would like to have enormous tonnages of really, really high quality forage. But I think my preference would always be to have a smaller quantity of really high quality forage, because if you're faced with a mountain of forage which is sort of, you know, 9 point something or in the low tens as far as the ME is concerned, massively high fiber levels and very poor fiber digestibility, it really is hard work pushing that water uphill to try and get cows to milk with that sort of forage. Whereas at least if you've got the quality in the forage, you have the option to add to that with other ingredients. But without that really good base, it's hard work.
And we were talking about it earlier, weren't we, Elliot, about feed markets at the moment. That, yes, there's a bit of volatility, but it seems a bit of a calmer sea than this time last year.
It does, yeah. And I think, you know, as Paul says, trying to ensure some high quality grass within these diets is really going to try and avoid us where we're going to be purchasing so much feed and unnecessarily. I think there's been a few windows in the market to get a bit of feed bought just lately at reasonable prices. But what are reasonable prices? I think it's really what it comes down to, a case-by-case basis, and get financial planning put in place, see what you can afford. It's not necessarily just about pumping out the litres. It is about trying to maximise margin per cow, especially in this current market.
We've spoken about the weather affecting sentiment, but I'm interested in your sort of both your takes really on how milk price is impacting sentiment. So we're in a falling milk price scenario. That's not news. So farmers are still going to need milk in the tank. How is the milk price impacting sentiment on farm? Elliot, we'll go to you first.
Great question. I think really it's a case by case one again. I think we've had a fantastic 12 to 18 months. I think if it wasn't for that, sentiment would be in a completely different place. If we'd had a mediocre last 12 months and we hadn't had the record highs that we've seen, you know, farmers' positivity over that period has been phenomenal. We'd be in a totally different place now if that wasn't the case. As a whole, they remain positive, as do I. I think we've got to. I think this is something at the moment, you know, Chris spoke about a couple of weeks ago. I don't think traders have necessarily taken into account where we are with forage and what that's going to do to milk flows. So there could be a turnaround, but it's really trying to try to keep them going, keep that sentiment there, try and just get the best optimum level of performance out of those cows, a bit what I just said, and feed optimally for margin per litre in light of milk price and these volatile feed markets. I've mentioned, but I'll mention again, people need to get financial budgets in place and monitor cash flow, especially for this short term. That's where we're going to become a bit of a sticking point in the short term. But I think long term is positive.
Paul?
Yeah, the big cuts did have hit really hard, and sentiment has been pretty negative on a lot of farms since, particularly amongst farmers that haven't actually done a budget and they're just looking at their plummeting milk checks. As Elliot's alluded to, you know, when you do actually get the numbers down on paper and compare the lower input costs that we're going to see coming through with feed, etc. this time, I wouldn't say the picture is going to be anything like as rosy as last year, but it certainly isn't as black as it was back in sort of 15, 16, when we had 18 months of death by a thousand cuts. Yeah, the current prices, as we know, are well below the cost of production. So we will need to see some indications of a turnaround in prices fairly soon to get that sentiment at least plateaued and hopefully picking up again.
Now, this is where I think we bring out the drum roll jingle again. I think it's coming out. Mr. Paul Mason, have we already seen peak milk? And if yes, when was it?
Well, yes, I'm almost certain that we're now past the peak. The latest numbers that we have were to the 6th of May, and they showed production pretty much flat week on week. And actually marginally lower than they were at the same time last year. So at that stage, I put my head on the block with my colleagues and said that my prediction for peak milk would be sometime between the 8th and the 13th of May. But I suspect that they're all doing their Mystic Meg impressions now. But I suspect that those thunderstorms that week may have knocked the top off that, and we may have actually seen peak milk sort of over the coronation weekend. As far as the forward view is concerned, then over the next couple of weeks, the spring block are going to start serving cows, and before long, the autumn blocks will begin to dry off. So I expect things to follow the usual trend and drop off pretty quickly from here on in now.
Okay. Listeners won't have to wait long because there'll be some more data tomorrow, won't there, Paul?
Yes, there will. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. By tomorrow, I will know whether I've got it wrong again or not.
You know, we're not going to let you edit it out, though, don't you?
Yes. That goes without saying, doesn't it?
Going in regardless. just take us back to some previous years in terms of how that data shifted.
Relative to last year, if my sort of finger in the air guesstimate is reasonably close, then it'll be fairly similar to last year, but quite a bit later than some of the years we've seen more recently. I think the earliest was around about the 20th of April, 3 or 4 years ago. But one thing that we have seen this time is a much more restrained peak on the back of the weather. It seems a far cry, really, at the moment from the figures we were seeing in February and early March, when cows had gone out onto really dry ground, high dry matter grass. And, you know, we were looking at figures 4% or more higher year on year. But then it obviously started to rain, and the rest is now history, which a bit of history that most of us will want to forget in a hurry, really, to be honest. It's been a miserable spring. But say, particularly with silage stocks tight, we really needed a decent turnout. But the fourth wettest March on record, I think, in England and Wales, saw that scuppered. And although April was pretty average in terms of rainfall across the country, ground conditions never recovered, and it's been a very, very tricky season for grazing, with cows in and out, and you know, on off grazing, and just generally just been hard work to try and look after the pastures and get the residuals down to the levels that we need to maintain the quality for the rest of the season, really.
Yeah, time of resilience, that's for sure. So let's just wrap this up by talking, let's return to talking about milk price, actually. Paul, what is your feeling on the ground in terms of milk price recovery, and what does this mean in terms of forage?
Well, as previously mentioned, I think we've got many producers now being paid under the cost of production, so there will need to be an incentive pretty soon. I was very pleased to hear Chris's report that the sort of the green shoots of recovery that we've been seeing in the futures market are still growing and haven't been cut off at the bootstraps. But we've got to remember that that recovery is coming from a pretty low base. So there's a fair way to go before we get into that situation where we're back at an equilibrium. But I think probably the difference between where we are now and perhaps where we have been in the past is that there are signs of recovery in the foreseeable. As far as the forage is concerned, then obviously the weather turning this week and the medium range forecasts for decent settled conditions now going through for the rest of May and into early June have probably saved the day. Most farms will have first cut in the bag over the next few days, hopefully. And so we are in a much better place than we were if we go back 2 years, when, you know, silage quality was really compromised, when there was the weather window didn't come until right at the end of May. Then again, looking at maize, yes, we'll hopefully see some big acreage drilled over the next few weeks. So from a forage stocks perspective, I think we're hopefully, you know, well on our way to getting the larder replenished. But hesitant to be too gung-ho at this stage, given what we saw last year and the complete turnaround from our February flush to our very mediocre May, really.
You're chickening out, Paul. You're normally good for a Mystic Mace outlook. Do you want to just comment a little bit more on the maize situation? Because, you know, yes, there's an opportunity for it going in at the moment, but the sentiment that I'm picking up is that actually quite a bit of that is delayed to where it would normally be going in. Is that what you're hearing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, normally we would start to see some maize drills appearing in the latter part of April. There has been a little bit snatched on some of the lighter ground, but by far and away the majority will be going in now. As I said earlier on, maize needs its heat units to get to maturity, and the later it goes in, the later the harvest becomes, and that brings its own difficulties potentially. Whereas, you know, last year we were all nicely wrapped up with dust flying at the end of September, it's likely that harvest will be pushed back to October this year, which will potentially bring its own problems.
Chris, can I just go over to you for a minute? This is perhaps a little bit of an unfair question, but what's your gut telling you at the moment in terms of how long this recovery might take in terms of price?
Well, I think it's probably going to take a fair while yet. I'm not hearing anything that would bring it forward from, say, early quarter four back into quarter three. Although the prices that I did quote and have seen recently is a pretty big step up, certainly on mozzarella and Gouda. So I think that's a positive, but I'm not hearing any of the traders say, oh, it's going to be quarter three now rather than quarter four. So the sentiment is still later in the year for significant improvements. But, you know, anything could happen. And from the market's point of view, you know, the worse the forage season is, the better, because that points to lower volumes later in the year. And I know that that's not very good from a farmer point of view, but it is from a market's point of view. You know, I'm certainly writing about the difficulties of the grazing and the forage season, particularly down the south. So maybe that will be a driver to help a change in sentiment. Who knows?
Okay. Well, I think we will leave it on that point. That is all we have time for. But a big thank you to our guests today, Paul Mason, Elliot Greenfield, Chris Walkland, and to our podcast producer, Becky Leach, of course. Thank you very much for listening. Please see the show notes for more information, including our podcast disclaimer. We'll be back with you next week. But for now, it's goodbye from all of us here.